That was
weird and caused confusion.
Oh, precious moron.
Well, hello everyone. Welcome to another Office Hours. We got a file on you. We got a file on you. Everybody singing Reform's new anthem, Reform UK, after the shocking revelations on Ed Dutton's interview last night. It seems that time and time again, old Nigel just sabotages the party that he's leading. It's mesmerizing, really. I got a file on you. Wait, should I just play it again?
He said, I have a file on them. I have a file on everyone. This was before the party had even been set up. And I said, oh, so do you have a file on me?
All together now, everyone. So anyway, I'm not actually here to talk about Reform today. I had fun putting that together, but let us talk now about the matter at hand. Well, I thought I'd do a little bit different, something a little bit different today, because Thursday's video is called What on Earth is Keir Starmer doing? With the Ukraine situation, he is pledging to put 30,000 troops, 30,000 men into Ukraine. Not all British, only 10,000 of them will be British, apparently. You know, maybe another 10,000 from France, and then 10,000 rainbow dildo coalition from the rest of Europe are going to be put into Ukraine. On Thursday, which is when the big summit is being held, I'm going to be kind of analysing what I think Starmer is up to with that. Today, I am going to be looking at something else. Somebody's moaning that I'm low audio. My audio is fine. My audio is usual. My audio is, you just turn up your speaker. Sorry for the brief delay, by the way. I was selecting a cigar. I've already had an H. Upman Magnum 46 today, which is quite a meaty cigar to start the day with, but now I've got my second one of the day with my coffee here, and I have plucked out from the old Selezione Hoyo Epicure number 2. Smooth classic, I tell you. People often ask me if I want to get into Cuban cigars, what's the first one I should smoke, or smoked a cigar before, what should I smoke? Hoyo de Monterrey Epicure number 2. Not only the beginner's choice, but the connoisseur's choice too. Never fails. Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Perfect draw, perfect construction. Before we get going here, I'll just remind everyone to do my courses at the academic agency. All of the best courses, of course. I'm in a kind of fruity sort of mood today. Maybe I'll put on my Mandy. Maybe I'll put on my Mandy. Have I still got that tune here? Maybe I'll do the Mandy promo code again just for this stream. I'll turn it on. Hold on. Yeah, buy a course with promo code Mandy.
Country in which I have spent so much of my adult life and admire so much.
promo code MANDY. 25% off all courses. Come on down. Academic Agency. Every single course. 25% off. Promo code MANDY.
Country in which I have spent so much of my adult life and admired.
I've become really obsessed with that video. Everything about it, it's not just Mandelson's sliminess. The country I admire so much. I mean, he's literally Kaa from the Jungle Book, or even like Sir Hiss from the Disney Robin Hood film. It's not just his sliminess. It's everything about it, the lighting. There's a slight kind of mist. Like there's a kind of like filter on the screen, so the background is kind of hazy and like dreamlike. It's incredible. You track down and watch the whole thing. Mandelson talks about his life growing up with Jewish parents. It is incredible. It really is. It's become one of my favorite things ever. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm glad to be joined today by the chat, by all the members of the audience that I admire so much. We're going to be doing something a little bit different before the super thanks and the super chats and things today. And that is I'm looking at, hold on a second. I just realized that the looming figure of the Dark Lord is looking. Is that better? Is that better? Maybe you should just look at him and listen to my face. I don't know. Okay. I've been interested in a figure in Russian politics for quite some time. That is Dmitry Medvedev. Let me just share my screen here so you can see. We're going to be reading some of his insane tweets. But one of the things that's very interesting about Medvedev is that he was actually the president of Russia. And he was tipped at one point to be Putin's successor. They did this thing for a period where Medvedev would be the prime minister, Putin would be the president. And then when Putin hit up against the term limits, Putin became the prime minister and Medvedev became the president. But everybody knew that Putin was still in charge, okay? And then Putin found a way to fix the term limit issue, some loophole, to become the president again. It was like, oh, right, well, it doesn't say consecutive, does it? Right? So Medvedev came in, and then it's like, right, now I get two more consecutive terms. And I think Putin may have even fixed that now to become, like, president for life or something, right? So, but for a period, Medvedev was tipped. He was kind of talked of as Putin's Robin. It was like Batman and Robin. The idea was that when Putin was done, Medvedev would be the natural successor. Okay. And there's lots of pictures of them together as a kind of double team, right? And they really were. Let me just share my screen here, because this is kind of slightly bizarre. They were literally a Batman and Robin. There they are in Grand Theft Auto Russian gangster chic there. There they are having a little cup of tea together. There they are laughing. There they are wide walking together, right? Putin loves a wide walk. There they are on one of Putin's massive desks. What else? I mean, they really were Batman and Robin of Russian politics, with Medvedev clearly as the Robin, okay? Now, what happened at some point is that it seems like Medvedev or the powers that be in Russia and Putin kind of there's Putin working out with Medvedev as the kind of wingman, as the kind of spotter. It's just incredible. So I mean, it literally was like, here's mini Putla. Look at Putin working out. Amazing. They were this kind of double act, this Batman and Robin. But at some point, Medvedev got sidelined, i.e. the idea of him being Putin's heir and successor was nixed. And Putin was like, yeah, I'm not sure about Medvedev. Actually, I will just carry on until I die, and then until I figure out who's going to be my successor. But Medvedev, rather than being like thrown under the bus, or, you know, he just kind of took it and is literally now just a kind of Putin butt boy, basically. He's just like a kind of Putin cheerleader, despite having been demoted from being like Putin's Robin or number two. Now he's just like a kind of background cheerleader minion, right? It's kind of a little bit strange. In a weird way, do you remember during the election where Trump, Elon Musk, like jumped behind Trump, and it was like, this is kind of a bit odd, because Medvedev's got that energy where Musk jumped in the air as a kind of Trump minion. He does sit on the National Security Council of Russia. So it's not like he's not still part of the government. It's just that he's no longer like Putin's number two. Okay. Now one of the things that interests me about Medvedev is that, unlike Lavrov, I mean, Lavrov has been the Russian foreign minister since 1994. So that's 22 years straight as the foreign minister of Russia. And if you have a look at Lavrov's background, he goes all the way back into USSR times. He was in the kind of bureaucracy of the USSR. And like Putin, is an old Soviet system man. Okay. So he goes all the way back to those days. And it seems like there's like a Russian continuity deep state that Lavrov is a part of. Okay. Now, I kind of like Lavrov because, you know, he spent 22 years as Russia's top diplomat, as the foreign minister. And I don't know, I watched that interview with Judge Knapp, and, you know, he sounds very adult, right? He's like the adult in every room. And after 22 years as the foreign secretary, you know, he's got a lot of wisdom and experience and so on. But Medvedev is not like that. Medvedev is fucking mental, right? He is insane. He is unchained with the stuff that he says on his Twitter account. And I was trying to like make sense, like why out of Putin's government is Medvedev allowed to be like this, right? How does he mouth off all the time? Right, Lavrov doesn't kind of go into these diatribes in the same way that Medvedev does. And the solution, the kind of answer to the question seems to be that Putin lets Medvedev mouth off, basically, almost in the same way that Don Jr., right, is the link between Trump and his base, right? Don Jr. is a massive MAGAtard and is like number one cheerleader on Twitter, okay? And Don Jr. says stuff on Twitter that Trump would never say, okay? And it seems like Medvedev plays this role for Putin. That Medvedev is basically the voice of Putin's base, his domestic base within Russia, okay? Now what I find very interesting is that with Medvedev, all of the kind of diplomatic airs and graces and the careful language of Lavrov is taken away, right? And he just shows you what the hardcores in Russia are thinking. So I thought it might be quite instructive to have a look through Medvedev's tweets to see what the Russians are actually thinking, okay? Lavrov is the kind of, you know, dotting of the I's and the crossing of the T's, the careful diplomacy. Medvedev is like, actually, this is what we think. This is what we want. Okay. Because I think it's an insight into what the average Russia might be thinking. And also the sorts of voices that Putin needs to placate, right? Medvedev isn't saying this stuff just by accident. He's saying this stuff because Putin wants his base to know that he's with them. Okay. Like Putin's a politician, just like every other politician. So whether he's talking at both sides of his mouth, you know, some within Russia have told me he always does that. But let's have a look to see what Medvedev actually, like what the Russians actually think. Okay. And I think it might be quite instructive. So he says, Macron and Starmer are playing dumb. Time and again, they are told that peacekeepers must be from non-NATO states. No, we will send tens of thousands. Just lay it out. You want to give military aid to the neo-Nazis in Kiev? That means war with NATO. Consult with Trump, scumbags. Right? You see what I'm saying, right? He just doesn't... He just basically is straight talking and says what the Putin base thinks. Also notice the language, right? This is a very clear through line in Russian messaging that the Zelensky regime in Ukraine is basically Nazi in nature, that it's neo-Nazi. And you know, when I'm watching Judge Knapp, or when I'm watching Duran and so on, to be fair to Duran, that they lean less heavily on this rhetoric. But some of them, when they get going, right, most notably Scott Ritter, but also like on occasion, I've heard Larry Johnson use this sort of language. Ray McGovern uses this language. There's a few of them who use this language. When they really get going, this is like a consistent through line in their rhetoric that they believe that the Ukrainian regime is Nazi. And I think that we'll be finding that this is a consistent through line in Medvedev's messaging as well. Okay. So let's get, and I think it's important to keep this in mind because this is like, you know, it's a big counterpoint to this notion of the based Putin all the time, right? Russia's got its own boomer truth regime and Putin leans into that pretty heavily, as you can see with this sort of rhetoric. Okay. Medvedev. UK updates Trump. Russia should accept the proposal for a ceasefire in Ukraine without any conditions, says British Foreign Secretary. Britain and its minister can shove their idea back up the shithole it came from, diplomatically speaking. I mean, it's just... Oh, fucking hell. And you've got to think, like, it's like... Putin, I mean, Lavrov with his office and all of these meetings and Putin with his carefully worded statements and all of that. And then he's got Medvedev on there basically spouting off like this. I mean, it can't be an accident, right? Okay. I mean, bear in mind now, this is around a situation that could spark World War III. And he's just like, yeah, you know, shove your idea back up the shithole, you know. Medvedev, in Romania, the deep state has effectively put democracy 6 feet under. What should the people do with such a government? Just swallow it? No big deal. The current Romanian authorities, clown, are much better than Nicolae Ceausescu. They're kind and fair. And then let's have a look. They are building a stairway to heaven and found themselves on the road to hell. Russia is isolated. Sanctions will crush its economy. We'll support the Kyiv regime for as long as it takes. The West's not waging a hybrid war against Russia. Nuclear conflict is impossible. It's just a Russian narrative and frenzy propaganda. We must inflict a strategic defeat on Russia. How did it turn out? Not a chance. You've soiled yourselves, ladies and gentlemen. P.S. Careful with your nuclear arsenal. I mean, okay. It's. I think that's... Hey there, Macron. Careful with your nuclear arsenal. And it's like, if you're Starmer or Macron or even Trump, do you pay attention to this guy? Like what do the Russians say? Like, oh, don't pay any attention to Dmitry. He's just like spouting off shit for our grugs, basically. Ignore him. Don't worry about him. Like, do you think that is said? The Foreign Office here, or people like Rubio, or Pete Hegseth, right? Do you think they actually watch this and be like, hold on a second, you're telling us one thing, Vlad, but your boy Robin here, He's threatening nuclear war. And this is what I wonder about with Medvedev. Does anybody have any insight into how this is allowed to carry on? And does this explain a little bit more the actions of the Western governments? Right? Because it's like, well, do we believe what Putin is saying? Do we believe what Lavrov is saying? Or do we just read this guy's timeline and be like, yeah, they fucking hate us and want war? Genuine question. Genuine question. I mean, the thing is that you could say, well, is this for domestic consumption? If it was for domestic consumption, why isn't it written in English, right? Does Medvedev have a thing where he tweets in Russian and then it gets auto, like, is this a bot that auto-translates Medvedev tweets into English? Does anybody know? Is this, because I know that the Ayatollah Khamenei tweets out in Farsi and then it auto translates him into every language. Does that happen? Or if so, then it's like, okay, well, this is just for the Russian audience, but why would they leave the English bot on if they didn't want people to see it, you know? And don't forget, he was the president of Russia. So Macron and, well, I don't know about Macron, but a lot of these guys will have met Medvedev back in the day or when he was working for Putin's, back in the early 2010s when he was the prime minister. So anyway, let's carry on. Medvedev, Russia has become, as I speak to you and for years to come, a threat to France and Europe, says Macron. Micron himself poses no big threat, though. He'll disappear forever no later than May the 14th, 2027, and he won't be missed. The Trump administration no longer wants to feed the Nazi mutt in Kiev. The flea-ridden dog was picked up by a decrepit Europe, joyfully exclaiming, "My doggy, it's no use. The mad parasitic dog is dangerous, so better to put it down quietly without any suffering, Dixie." I mean, it's just fucking mental. Absolutely mental. I mean, he has got to be. I mean, I know Trump is the God Emperor, Lord of Twitter, right? But Medvedev's got to be up there with one of the best shit posters of all time. But it's just kind of. It's like they're talking about. You've got to understand the context. They're talking about a peace deal. And Putin has got one of his senior advisors, or in theory, a senior government official, tweeting out this shit all day, every day. That's like, are you serious about peace or maybe not? Maybe not. I mean, it's a serious question, right? I mean, how does it work? Like within the Russian government? Putin's like, you know, he holds his cabinet meeting. You know, Sergey, you know, tell me what you've been doing with the Americans. Give us the diplomatic update. You know, finance minister, how's the economy going? Very good, Vlad. We've, printed a lot more guns or whatever. And then Dmitry, how was your day? Oh, spent the day shitposting, chief. Oh, fucking brilliant. I had 13,000 likes on that one. I mean, does he do anything else or what? I mean, I'd love a Russian to tell me what the idea is here. Any Russians in the chat, tell me. Let's carry on going, right? The anti-Trump Russophobic coven gathered in London to swear allegiance to Nazi nobodies in Kiev. It's a shameful sight, worse than the verbal diarrhea of a clown in the Oval Office. They want to continue the war till the last Ukrainian. Medvedev. The insolent pig finally got a proper slapdown in the Oval Office. And Donald Trump is right. The Kyiv regime is gambling with World War III. Strategic ambiguity? I don't think so. It's just the Kiev thief, pathological liar, and freeloader has got Trump fed up with his shenanigans. A dictator without elections, Zelensky, you better move fast or he is not going to have a country left. If you told me just 3 months ago that these were the words of the US president, I would have laughed out loud. Trump is 200% right. Bankrupt clown. While Paris hosted a gathering of European countries vehemently advocating war without end, Kiev's drug addict attacked an oil facility belonging to the International Caspian Pipeline Consortium, which carries US oil. An anti-Trump international seems to be taking shape in Europe. The Kiev clown chastised Trump for everything possible. That is, the washed-up beggar and thief spat into the giver's hand. The question is, how will Trump react? You know, I kind of did. I mean, I talked at the start about Grand Theft Auto Chic. What was the Grand Theft Auto with the Russian, with the Russians in it, with the Russian mafia? I mean, this is some straight up kind of Russian kind of tough man peasant talk here. It's kind of fucking mental. It's just mental. Trump explained how Kiev would pay the US with Ukraine's rare earths. What about Europe? It will pay through the nose to piece the failed state of Ukraine back together from its scraps. Europeans, thank your leaders for this. Ursula, Macron, Schultz, and other pathetic figures. Smart move by Musk trying to plug USA's deep throat. Let's hope notorious deep state doesn't swallow him whole. Now, you know, you've got to understand, right? When shitlibs talk about the connection between Trump and the Russians, it is weird, isn't it? That this guy who's shooting his mouth off every single day and is a kind of Putin lackey spends all day, every day, shit-talking European leaders and Washington elites. But he supports Musk cutting US aid. So I ask you again, who are these tweets for? Why would the Russian domestic audience care about US aid? That's the question. It's weird, isn't it? Let's carry on. During his first week back in the White House, Donald Trump tried to mislead and confuse the entire world, but not us. We won't be fooled again. Joe, the walking dead, is gone. He left a grim legacy for his successor. As things stand, full normalization of relations between the US and Russia is impossible. And frankly speaking, it's unclear whether we actually need it. Junkie freak Zelensky said that he honestly despises the Russian people. Let the Nazi scum not doubt the Russian people despise him with all their hearts. Fucking hell. It's just brilliant. I might just do this all day until this epicure or two's gone. It's brilliant. But also, I think you'd agree the deeper point here, it's weird, isn't it? Like, why is this allowed to go on? And I wonder if there are periods where he said, look, Dmitry, radar in, bud. I wonder if Lavrov ever knocks on his door and says, look, Dmitry, I know you have fun on Twitter, mate, but rein it in, I'm trying to do a job here. Ah, sod them, they're all pigs. You know, I mean, is he just like sitting there at his desk drinking vodka all day, getting progressively more hammered and just banging out these bangers? I mean, it's just... Okay, let's carry on. Not sure why the US, a country, needs to annex Canada, Greenland, or even Britain and take back the Panama Canal. There's a more civilized way. Trump and Musk could just buy the land, making it their private property. So, like, you know, not truly counter-signaling Trump and Musk, just kind of giving them a helpful hand, maybe. And isn't that what ended up happening? That Trump facilitated a deal for BlackRock to buy Panama Canal? Carry on. Medvedev. South Korea is at it again, one impeachment after another. Might as well start Squid Game for the government. Got your popcorn ready? So there's Medvedev. Just, I mean, all day, every day, just shit talking the friends of the West and supporting like North Korea. Yay, the North Korea! I can't wait until we get to the Middle East tweets. I mean, let's carry on. Turns out, outgoing Secretary State Secretary Blinken is a rare kind of degenerate. He's demanding Ukraine lower its conscription age to continue receiving US assistance. This means 18-year-olds will now be dying, but the Biden administration couldn't care less. A rare kind of degenerate. Costa, the new European Council head, and the Russia-phobic top EU diplomat Kallas, turns up in Kiev on his first day. It shows the top priority is prolonging the war, not ensuring the well-being of the EU. Happy now, Europeans? So you got what you wanted? Well, you've damn well got it. A hypersonic ballistic missile attack. So just, you know, show him Russian bombs, goading the Ukrainians. Carry on. Medvedev. Russia's new nuclear doctrine means NATO missiles fired against our country could be deemed an attack by the bloc on Russia. Russia could retaliate with WMD against Kiev and key NATO facilities, wherever they're located. That means World War III. Okay, now, chill out, Dmitry. Take the man's vodka away. Medvedev, it's actually hilarious to look at the terrified faces of European establishment mutts who used to call Trump a Russian asset, who are now soiling themselves as they rush to kiss the boots of their new master. I like to imagine this is how the Bolsheviks used to talk to each other. Do you think that Stalin, like when he was in jail, was like this? I imagine there's like a Russian type that this guy fits into. Getting a very clear vibe of him, you know. Medvedev, Kamala is finished. Let her keep cackling infectiously. The objectives of the special military operation remain unchanged and will be achieved. Now, look, again, why would the Russian domestic audience care about like cackling Kamala? That's Steve Turley talking, right? That's Steve Turley talk. So at least part of this is surely designed for the American domestic audience. This would also explain why Alexander Dugin has been all over my timeline recently doing interviews with various different channels, and why there was a push in the American right-wing space to get people reading Dugin. I'm telling you, there's more to this than meets the eye. That is MAGA-coded, that. It's all MAGA-coded, isn't it? Medvedev, the puppet president of Georgia, refused to accept the election and went against the constitution by calling for a coup. The standard practice in such cases is removal from office and arrest. Germany's Rheinmetall has launched the force of its four weapons manufacturing plants in Ukraine. As promised, we're looking forward to seeing some Russian fireworks on the premises. So he's just outright threatening bombing of German facilities. These Polacks are cruising for a bruising. They're shutting down our consulate and considering expelling our ambassador. In the 1920s, justice was swift for envoys from enemy countries. Andreev, Blumkin and poor German ambassador von Mirbeck are examples. Borkawa. I mean, he's literally going back into like Soviet history and, you know, pulling up examples of when various people were just killed for subversion. And I mean, this is just, I mean, it's tremendous world-class shitposting, but also really quite bizarre that this guy is a high-ranking official in the Putin government who just shitposts all day, every day, in ways that are extremely provocative against Western powers and against people like Poland. Trump got carried away. Did he really talk about hitting fracking, fricking Moscow? Of course not. He's generally smooth as silk in negotiations, and there's only one answer to such words. Your fricking Washington will get hit too. In general, our relationship with him is quite warm. Laughter. Laughter. Just some friendly threats of bombs. Eh, Don? Maybe they just fucking love this stuff. Maybe this is just like gangster, like, right, Trump's a New York gangster. I'm a Moscow gangster. Let's just, you know, I bomb you, you bomb me. It's all banter at the end of the day. We're only two of the most powerful countries in the world. Let's just joke about bombing each other and starting World War III, eh? Nuclear Armageddon. Yeah, let's just laugh. Smooth as silk. Biden says he wants to negotiate with Russia on reducing SNF. However, the US is waging an almost full-scale, not hybrid war against us and seeks Moscow's strategic defeat. Negotiating nuclear arms reduction with the US is as useful as discussing a truth with Hitler in 1945. See, the Russian boomer truth. A constant part of Medvedev's posting. No cash to clear up after Hurricane Milton in Florida. No cash for French farmers. No cash to revive German industry. However, they found enough cash to support a crazy drunken mobs of Ukrainian thugs in Europe and churn out weapons to exterminate Slavs in military conflict. Notice, by the way, that another constant part of Medvedev's messaging is showing that he's quite aware of the domestic situation inside of your country, what each European nation is up to, what their domestic policies are, and then using that as a cudgel to get back to the Ukraine thing. Okay, it's very clever because all of this messaging leans directly into what you might think of dissident politics in all of these different countries. Okay. So it's a very, I hesitate to say sophisticated because it's quite transparent, but it's kind of clear that Russia hopes to enlist the support of people who are against Western elites. And generally speaking, it has been quite successful, I would say. I would say that on the whole, most people who are kind of against Western elites have kind of taken Russia's side broadly speaking, they've taken the Russian point of view or the more realist Mearsheimer point of view. Now, Morgoth wrote a piece recently on Substack questioning some of this. And I was going to, because there's the summit this week, I couldn't really talk to it this week because there was a big news story on Thursday. But hopefully next week nothing happens. And I want to read through that Morgoth article and consider some of the points he brings up, because generally he does bring up some very good points, I think, vis-a-vis European security and Russia, some of the Mackinder stuff as well. So I want to talk to that soon. But I would say in the short term, I'm still broadly on the side of saying that Britain should not be sending 10,000 troops to Ukraine or trying to foment a war with Russia here and now, because we're just not in a position to do it, basically. But it feels like the calculus in Europe is different. Maybe they think they can take Putin. I don't know. But anyway. So let's carry on with this. If Trump wins, I believe that he will actually bring that conflict to a close. I really do. I think he'll call Putin and tell him that this is enough, said US Speaker Mike Johnson. And what if Putin says not yet? Ukraine must capitulate and no joining NATO. And you see, this is very interesting, I think, because there's no pulling of punches with Medvedev. He's a straight talker. So he reveals the actual Russian position at every stage of the way. I mean, you could save yourself a lot of time watching Duran and all these people and just read these tweets and be like, right, that's the position then. Putin wants Ukraine to capitulate. Now, there is a bit of nuance here, because within the politics of Russia, Medvedev positions himself to Putin's right, okay, as the hardliner, right? Maybe Lavrov is the more moderate or the softliner or the good cop to Medvedev's bad cop, if you want to put it that way. And Putin then, ever the master politician, can present himself as the moderate as against Medvedev. See the play? But Medvedev does provide you with the hardline view. And it's also a view, a point of view, that clearly has purchase within Russia. So it's well worth paying attention to. Let's see. I'll just do a few more of these, and then we'll hit the super thanks and so on. I think the point is, well, he talks about David Lammy here. Britain's Foreign Secretary David Lammy has promised Ukraine 100 years of support. One, he is lying. Two, so-called Ukraine will not last a quarter of that time. Three, the island called Britain is likely to sink in the next few years. Our hypersonic missile will help if necessary. I mean, he's only joking about bombing the shit out of our country. What do you want a poll for, Free Spirit? What's the poll for? Tell me what you want the poll. What's the poll? If you tell me what the poll is, I'll set it up. I always love a poll. I mean, there's another kind of more postmodern take on this, which is that Medvedev is the Russian equivalent of slop. And it's just theatre, basically. There's the good cop, bad cop angle. There's the he's just appeasing the base angle. This could just be slop. It just could be like, you know, this is the Russian punch and show, Judy show, you know? I don't know. I just find it fascinating that he's allowed to carry on in this way. And he's not like, even though he's been demoted from being Putin's heir, he's still like kept on as this dude, as this kind of like, not less lapdog and more attack dog. If you imagine like a guy who's got like a little bulldog that, you know, aggressively yaps. This is what Medvedev is, like the Russian bulldog. I suppose it'd be a Russian husky, would it? I don't know. I'm not very good at dogs. Is a husky a dog? Russian husky. I don't know. All right, so. Now, okay, let's do a poll on what we think. What is Medvedev for, right? I'll do a poll here, and we'll see where people are on this. And I'd love the actual Russian point of view. What is Medvedev for? Okay, so option one, slop/theatre. Option two, for market. Option three is bad cop to Lavrov's good cop. And option four is for MAGA consumption. Let's start the poll. Okay, so the poll is running. I'll just while that poll is running, I'll read a few more Medvedevs. Macron, get out of France now. Durov's army is coming to get you. Terror in the Kursk region. The West have made things much worse for Ukraine, which is still under their charge. And now there will be no more pointless spending and a radically higher number of caskets. No negotiations until the enemy is completely destroyed! Fucking hell, Dmitry. Fucking mental. Tell us what you really feel, mate. The German newspaper Bild has published a revanchist article where it proudly announces German tanks come back to the Russian land. In response, we're going to do everything to bring the newest Russian tanks to Platz de la Republik. In 2008, we defended our people and stood up for our country's interests after a raid by that freak, Saakashvili. The current military campaign will also end in Russia's unconditional victory. Medvedev, the knot is tightening in the Middle East. Sorry for the innocent lives lost, that they are but hostages of a disgusting state, the USA. Meanwhile, it's clear to everyone that a full-scale war is the only way to a shaky peace in the region. No comment on the Paris Olympics, a disgusting sight. Macron-led France is turned into a slut grimacing to mutilations of a mad, ungodly crowd. Total disgrace. Compare this to the Russian-held brilliant 2014 Sochi Olympics and the 2018 FIFA World Cup. Stop watching the ugly freak show. That's it for Biden. So let us wish him good health. The goals of the special military operation will be achieved. Now he already won, if he wasn't already assassinated. There's the mugshot look. So, I mean, he is basically a Trump cheerleader, as well as, the mad war dog as well. So, let's see where we are with the poll, and then we will. So we've ended the poll. The winner is bad cop to Lavrov's good cop with 33%. 28% said he's slop/theater. 21% said he's for MAGA consumption. And 15% said he is for the domestic market. So there we are. And I suppose that they're not entirely mutually exclusive. I mean, it could be that it's theater, slop, and for MAGA. Or theater slop and for the Russian domestic market are all three at the same time. But do we take him seriously is the question. Do we take him seriously, or is this not part of official policy? Okay, let's have a look at super thanks. Then we'll look at super chats and get out of here for the day. Super thanks. I've got them up. Somebody's just put on last week's office hours, which was Farage versus Lowe. Thanks, $14 by Zeitgeist. Well, thank you very much, sir. I can see he's got a Tubbs from not Dan Tubbs, but Edward Tubbs from League of Gentlemen. This is a local shop for local people. We'll have no trouble here. Golden Age Puritan says, this is on last week's Deepest Law, Richard Dawkins and Biological Determinism. Attenborough is right and Ben Pyle is wrong. Why does the West artificially grow populations in areas of scarcity through aid, only to be committed to maintaining them with that unnatural and externally supplied support? Masses of people are created in a place with no jobs or prospects. What else could they do but go where there's something to do? So much superfluous biomass. Couldn't agree more, Golden Age Puritan. I am a reduce the population guy, not an increase the population guy. Strongly influenced, as ever, by Ulius Evola, who also had views along those lines. John Lister says, wow, Marx. So this is a comment on Unpopular Opinions, season 1, episode 15, from many, many, many years ago. John Lister, using his channel membership to the, utmost degree here. Wow, he says, Mark's first appearance in Unpopular Opinions was as head of online marketing for the Liberalists UK. This is deep lore that I needed to know. Also, retrospective thoughts on the Liberalists. Well, Mistake number one for the liberalists, appointing Mark as the head of online marketing. Sorry, Mark, I love you, really. I saw Mark was on Dutton recently. I noticed that Mark had appeared on Ed Dutton's channel. But, yeah. Okay. Sorry, Mark, I couldn't resist. You know, I love you, really. I don't fucking hate you. I want to see the joy stripped from your lies. Okay. That's it for the super thanks. Very quiet on the super thanks this week, but no matter. Thank you for the people who sent them. It's really, I appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. And it's you type of fans who support me financially through your super thanks and your super chats that I admire so much. Anyway, right.
Country in which I have spent so much of my adult life and admire so much.
All right, so let us now hit... did I even start the superthet? I never even started Entropy. Are you going to send Entropy when I never started it? You didn't think of that, did you? Right, I'll start Entropy now. So I'll hit the normal super chats first. Oh, Entropy is not starting. There's an issue with Entropy. Why is there an issue with Entropy? It's not working today. Start streaming. It's not working. Not working. Oh, I'm trying to sort this out. Come on.
Country in which I have spent so much of my adult life and admire so much.
I can't get enough of it. I'll watch it over and over again. Okay, let's see if it works this time. Go live. Okay, Entropy is up and running. Chris O'Hanlon, in there like a shot already. Chris O'Hanlon says... There we go. Here we go. Chris O'Hanlon says, if Blair is so sensible, surely he would advise Starmer not to do the stuff he's doing in schools. The head teacher who is achieving Eton level results in the inner city is not impressed with Labour's plans. I mean, I can tell you from direct experience that he is causing absolute havoc in the private school and in the state school sectors, because lots of people can't afford it. They have whacked up prices by 25%. And if you've got two or three kids who are all in private school, that is a shitload of money that they've just put on people. So people are taking their kids out of private schools and putting them back into state schools, which is then creating a squeeze on places across the entire sector. So it's an insane plan, really. Absolutely insane. But that was the early Sue Gray Labour, right? And that's gone through already now. Whether they'll reverse it or not, I don't know. But it's caused havoc. It really has. It's caused a lot of problems for that sector. And it's I wouldn't be surprised if quite a lot of private schools end up shutting down over it. Another thing it's doing is that it's making a real, there are still quite a few like girls only or boys only private schools. Well, it's putting those under a lot of strain as well, because obviously they already only take half of it. And, you know, if you've got a class of like, I don't know, 15 people in a year group or 20 people, four of them pull out. Well, all of a sudden your margins are really cut into then, and maybe they can't run, they have to let a teacher go or something. Right. So they are really causing trouble for the sector. And as far as I can tell, completely hateful Labour policy with no upside whatsoever. No upside whatsoever other than to kick people in the teeth, really. Stereo, because all that happens is, rather, I mean, you basically just deny one kid or two kids or three kids a better schooling, right? For what? I'm always reminded of that Margaret Thatcher clip that socialists want to, they don't want to bring everybody up, they want to pull everyone down. I mean, there is literally no logic to what Starmer's done on the private schools at all. So just the politics of absolute resentment is all it is. Studio Rayner says, and it's not like state schools in deprived areas are underfunded anymore. They're not. They're funded through the guilds. Some state schools have really amazing facilities. But again, the lesson of America should teach people the lesson on this. Right, some of the best funded state schools in the world per capita are in America. I know this because I've researched videos, I've pulled up the stats before, right? In Washington DC, for example, there are schools with millions upon millions of dollars of funding. State-of-the-art facilities, superb campuses, all the mod cons, everything could possibly ask for. And they're still coming out with nobody graduating, or, you know, 95% of people fail and have to redo the year, or, you know, two-thirds of the kids can't read, or two-thirds of them fail, you know, their SATs in maths, mathematics, right? Basic literacy failed. Throwing money at the issue when it comes to education, clearly, is not the answer when it comes to the ABCs of what makes a good education. What makes the private schools better is not the money. It's not the money that is spent by the fees, although that obviously helps them run things and pay salaries and so on. The thing that makes private schools better is that they have more license, more leeway, okay, to kind of teach people in their own way, right? Some of them stick to some of the old methods, for example. Some of them are stricter. They enforce uniform codes. They, you know, enforce basic standards in mathematics and grammar. And, you know, they won't take failure as an option and things like this. So there's lots of things where all that the state schools would need to do, rather than just throw money at it, why not just not adopt some of the things that those private schools are doing? Why not just, I mean, I've never understood that. Because it's not about facilities. It's not about money. It's about the ABCs of education itself. Inculcating good habits as opposed to bad habits. Basic standards. Discipline. Right? You don't need a degree in education to know any of that shit. Having a cohort of students capable of actually passing those tests as well. But that's a different matter that we need not to get into, you know. all right, let's carry on. Studio Rhino says, the East India Company is finally buying the British island. What do you mean by that? The East India Company is finally buying... What do you mean by that, Studio Rhino? I know the East India Company now exists as a kind of rump tea company, right? Rato Haina says, the easiest way to be despised is to be honest and make accurate predictions. People don't want the truth. They want vibes. Get in the crystal. Yes, Rito, as somebody who is accurate in their predictions, consistently correct on many, many different issues. It's true. That is why I'm despised, because I'm too honest. Instead, what I should have done is played the game. Instead, what I should have done is got on the Nigel bandwagon, the same as everybody else, and then be, you know, feign being shocked and surprised when I find out he's an establishment shill. Maybe I'd be making the big bucks, eh? If I played the game a bit more. If I ran this channel as Bill Apter rather than running it as Dave Meltzer, Stupid me. Maybe it's me who's the fool. What I should be doing is maximizing my output for maximum slop to pay into every single clown show rather than telling you to tune out the clown show. Isn't that right, Vito Hayner? That's what I should be doing. This Epicure 2 is fucking phenomenal, I tell you. Absolutely phenomenal. Let me carry on. I'm right in the middle of it right now. The second third has just been gold. Okay. Coney says, who is tipped to be Putin's successor? Now, that is a very good question. And I remember that there was speculation that it would be the economic guy. This guy, the current prime minister, Mikhail Mishustin. This guy here, Mikhail Mishustin. I'll show you his Wikipedia page. He is tipped to be the man who will ultimately take over from Putin. And yeah, there we go. He was the director of the Federal Taxation Service for 10 years. Yeah, that's why he has an economics background, basically. You see, he does a lot of stuff with finance. He is kind of credited, basically, with some of the financial turnaround within Russia. And maybe he's considered a safer pair of hands than Medvedev, right? Medvedev resigned in 2020. So I hear the Durand guys tip him to be next. You know, I could be wrong on that, but yeah. Okay, Femboy Fantasia. Femboy Fantasia. Okay, it takes all sorts, doesn't it? I mean, this is a sensible centrist channel, so you know what goes on in your own bedroom doesn't matter. I'm a liberal at heart. Says, don't Russian leaders have a history of saying random crazy things to keep Westerners confused and off balance? Well, I seem to remember that. I seem to remember that in Adam Curtis's documentary Hypernormalization, they talked about how Putin would do this domestically, that the people in Russia would never quite know whether they were coming or going. Because he'd have one guy say this, and then he'd have another guy say that. And Putin would do all sorts of things like funding opposition groups and, you know, whole kind of fiery bouts of rhetoric between two different parties that he was controlling himself. That's in the Curtis documentary, Hypernormalization. And I wonder if there's a similar dynamic at play with what he does internationally. I don't know. Maybe. XJRPR says, Medvedev, look at Boris Johnson's kissing interview. Boris said Putin is good at convincing the Americans that he's moderate compared to others in Moscow. Yeah, and it could be that Medvedev is there basically for Putin to say, look, I'm not as mad as that guy, right? Which is basically the same play as the Tories vis-a-vis the right, and the same play as Farage vis-a-vis the right. Right, so this is a playbook the conservatives themselves love to do, you know. And it's something that Douglas Murray likes to do as well. You know, if you don't listen to me, I don't like to think of what happened, then the real right will emerge. Sinister tone. Wry look to the camera. Isn't that right, Douglas? He's been doing that go around for 20 straight years. Old feline Douglas Murray. Fucking loves it, doesn't he? 0X says, Medvedev's 2025 reply of Zaporozhian Cossacks. Zaporozhian Cossacks. Sorry for butchering the pronunciation. I'm not very good at speaking foreign, I'm afraid. Never have been. Daniel Robinson says, succession in Russia is a very dangerous game. Indeed. And this is why I think that the West keeps thinking, oh, we can just wait Putin out. We can wait him out. And then without Putin, the regime will fall. Could just be wishful thinking, though. They think the same in Iran. All we have to do is wait the Ayatollah out. And as soon as the Ayatollah dies, it's all over for the Iranian regime. This is the way these people think. And it could be true. It could be true. I mean, look at what happened in Syria, right? Who knows? Juno says, was Hamlet's insanity absolutely necessary to enable him to take up his father's mantle and become a true patriarch? I don't really understand the question, because Hamlet doesn't do that, does he? Hamlet does not take up the mantle and become the true patriarch. He gets his entire family killed, and the play ends with Fortinbras, a foreign power, taking over Denmark. The Norwegians turn up at the end and take over. So Hamlet is an absolute disaster in all ways. If you look at it from a utilitarian point of view, foundations of Shakespeare's fans will know instantly that I have taken up the G. Wilson Nightline on Hamlet there. But I happen to think that G. Wilson Knight makes a lot of good points when it comes to Hamlet. In this source text, there's an older story, a medieval tale of Hamlet that Shakespeare takes this from, where Hamlet is like a Chad. He kind of, you know, smites all his enemies and takes over as the king at the end. That doesn't happen in Shakespeare's Hamlet. Hamlet is like a emo, neurotic Woody Allen emo kid who gets everybody killed. So Studio Reiner says, I think Meds is serious, unlike our Western leaders. The Russian elites seem to be losing their minds dealing with our boomer trust culture. Redacted Brainwave says, nothing to add. Cheers. Well, thank you very much, Brainwaves. Those are the sorts of super chats I admire so much. Studio Reiner says, Putin is considered very moderate in the Russian elite and public. Even if he wanted to accept concessions, he'd probably lose his position and be removed from leadership. I've heard that more than once, and that suggests that the Medvedev line is closer to what the Russians actually think, right? That what Medvedev is saying is not just kind of smoke. It is actually true, what he's saying, you know? G. Wilson Knight, by the way, a great Christian critic of the 1930s, pioneered the kind of symbolism, kind of symbolic way of reading Shakespeare, like a kind of giant poem. It has its pros and its cons. I happen to think he makes a very good reading of Hamlet. Some of the other plays less successful, but Wilson Knight is a very great imaginative critic. Other good critics, Jan Kott, this kind of old communist Pole guy writing in the 60s. He wrote a book called Shakespeare, Our Contemporary. Very imaginative critic. A.D. Nuttall wrote a book called Shakespeare the Thinker. A very imaginative critic. And any other good critics? Dr. Nima Parvini, his books on Shakespeare are great. I would buy all of those at once. Let's carry on. Studio Reiner says, why is it that the Greek are the best at explaining geopolitics? The Duran, you're better than most of the American domestic politics, and you're not even an American. Are you Greek by chance? Well, the thing is, Studio Reiner, I'm half Iranian. My dad is Iranian. And this little fact is something I'm not sure whether I should bring up that much when I'm on the Duran. Because the Greeks and the Persians have some history. And that history is remembered in both places, especially not that fondly by the Iranians. You know, when little AAA was in her mother's tummy, we were thinking of names to call her, different names. One of the names that came up was Alexandra, And I was like, I kind of like the ring of that. Alexandra kind of goes well on my surname, you know. My dad would have none of it. Can't call her Alexandra because of Alexander the Great. Just can't be done. So I keep that on the low when I'm on the Durang because I don't want to bring up old bad blood, you know. But maybe the Greeks, they've been at it for so long that they're very good at geopolitics, you know. says his name is okay. Med is not the only mad on Putin's right, LDPR. Full Spectrum Submission says, the lack of serious educational reform, deliberate reinforcement of power structures. Tangentially, when talking with my daughter's teacher, her priority is to contain me, not address my child's welfare. Yes, very interesting, that dynamic, isn't it? And it's like teachers have become little managers themselves, little management consultants themselves, managing parent expectations. I mean, so much of school now, as opposed to the ABCs of reading and writing, spelling, grammar, mathematics, arithmetic, geometry and the like, the bread and butter of what the school child should be doing. So much of school now is about SEN provisions. It's about ensuring a safe environment. It's about ensuring that the sensory needs of the children are cared for, because little Dolly's got this condition or that condition or this condition or that condition or this condition or that condition, that they'll be able to, have headphones on in class, that they can have a whoopee cushion to sit on or a bean bag, or that they're able to spend the lesson banging their head against the desk without being told off by the teacher. This is the reality of the modern world. And in fact, mentioning Blair, this is one good thing that he said, right? This is one good thing that he said. He said that the mental health crisis in Britain needs to stop. Too many people are self-diagnosing, said Blair. And this has been picked up by Wes Streeting, who's a Blair minion, who is the health secretary. Now, this could all be code for, listen, we haven't got the luxury of this shit anymore. You lot, all of you special needs kids, you're off to the army, whether you like it or not. There's a place for you, and it's on the front line. That's where you would have been. You don't have ADHD. You don't have autism. Look, have a rifle in your hand and get to war. That's where you would have been 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 150 years ago. Get in the army. And that's the sort of thing that your typical right winger would support. Trouble is, it's for an evil regime, which is so often the problem. But who knows? Some good may come of it. Steve Watson says, as soon as Umar has gone, we can reclaim Syria, Heraclitus. Heraclius, probably. Yeah, indeed. All right. I think that'll do for today. Hope you enjoyed it. I don't like these office hours to go on too long. You know, an hour, that's your lot. If lots of super chats are sent, we can stretch into a second hour. I'm going to finish the final third of this Epicure 2 in peace. Pick up a course at the academic agency. I remember now. Promo code Mandy will get you 25% off. Let's watch it one more time before I get out of here.
Country in which I have spent so much of my adult life and admire so much.
Promo code Mandy. 25% off all courses. Come on down. Academic agency. Every single course. 25% off. Promo code Mandy.
I have spent so much of my adult life and admired so much.
Last minute super chats just come in from Studio Rayner. I haven't seen you before, Studio. You must be a new watcher, but welcome, sir. Thank you for all the super chats today. He says, if the British elite wanted immigrants so much, they should choose the Persians instead of the Pakistanis. I think they want a dumb population like how the Saudis rule. The Greeks and the Persians are, and then he's just put a greater than sign. Well, you know, thing is about the Persians I know is that wherever they go, they seem to do very well. A lot of them have gone to Canada, believe it or not, where they have insanely high PhD per capita statistics. Quite why that is, I don't know. But practically every Iranian guy family that I know of, they're either doctors, engineers. There are basically four things that the Persian will do. Doctor, engineer. I do know one who's a lawyer. Doctor, engineer, let's say lawyer. The fourth one is taxi driver. And it's one of those four things, okay? But even the taxi drivers I know end up setting up their own taxi rank. So they'll be like the owner of a taxi rank. Why they go into those fields, I don't know. But yeah, so there we are. All right, so ladies and gentlemen, let's get out of here.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.